Welcome to the People of Bloomsbury podcast, the first book in the Curled Up and Cozy collection, narrated from the desk of the author, DJ Swales. Part 1, A New Day. Episode 3, Bob Marley. Branches swished overhead as the lights of a London taxi flashed across Jasper Mintz's face. He crept with the silence of a ninja towards the darkened doorway where Josie had just exited, where she had often stopped to second-guess recipes such as her macadamia nut satay sauce. It was the very same doorway where fate had seemed to cross Jasper's path with the exaggerated gait and thick dark glasses of Randall McCluth, a man who, though both blind and deaf, possessed a rhythm in his hips that would shame all but the most skillful Jamaican dancehall stars. Randall should have been classed as Jasper's legal landlord, but the Yorkshireman didn't pay a crumb in rent. Randall was more of an unwitting host who hadn't the foggiest idea that a secret spectator lived a large part of his life under his mattress, often watching him from between strategically placed boxes as he hummed and heaved his hypnotic hips around his flat. The fate-shifting meeting between Jasper and Randall had occurred on a clear spring day while Jasper was wandering from King's Cross to Soho. His route was as convoluted as that of any drunk, but he was bluntly sober. "Well, I never. Bob Marley lived in this very building," Jasper exclaimed, after blinking at a blue memorial plaque affixed to Ridgemount Gardens' mansion block. The building was assembled from blood-red bricks and plaster embellishments like white meringue. The corners of his mouth curled into a smile for the first time in days. Jasper had been born on the same day that Bob Marley died, in May 1981, you see. The plaque's unexpected words granted the Yorkshireman a reprieve from the crushing cloud he had walked under since leaving his gritty hostel. His imagination soared away from the burden of urgent and dispiriting searches for a new job and a home. Underlining both was Jasper's ever-present, unspoken search for love and belonging, exacerbated by the recent death of his grandmother. Josephine Mintz had been the last string that kept him tethered to the city of York, where he had lived on the top floor of her home and helped her with daily chores. But before Josephine was even buried, Noreen Mintz, Jasper's estranged mother, had placed the ivy-covered cottage up for sale. Jasper's twisting route from the hostel had taken him to the British Museum's wide courtyard, where the oppressive columns appeared to him like prison bars. His heart shrank in their shadow, plagued by the haunting insecurities and limiting beliefs that constantly welled in him. His veins ran cold as he felt himself almost dissolve away between the flagstones over which he walked, his feet leaden. He gazed at passing, chattering faces, hopeful of just one smile, but they swirled past his hollowed form like he was invisible. He wondered again if he had undergone some strange, irreversible mutation since he'd stepped off the London train with his solitary bag, escaping York and the trauma of being turfed out of his grandmother's home. Was he now some lower form of life? Like a toad? Was he destined to dwell alone in dark, damp places? The seemingly carefree world inhabited by others appeared beyond his reach. How did things come to this? He thought, looking up at the oppressive museum columns. Have I drifted too far to ever find my way back? If I just disappeared, would anyone even notice? While basking in the light of Bob Marley's plaque, for the first time in a while, Jasper experienced a humble sense that things might truly get better. He needed to believe it, knowing that the pool of savings he had brought down from Yorkshire had frittered away to almost nothing. The situation had birthed a new and paralyzing fear. It always crept up on him, whether he pondered life on park benches or distracted himself by plodding through Soho. He would always eventually find himself wringing his hands and tasting the iron tang of panic. Imagined cataclysmic fates would fill his head whenever he hid under the blankets of his cheap King's Cross hostel. "Where will I go when me wallet's empty?" he'd asked himself as two Polish girls did Pilates in the corner of the room, and a Thai boy listened to horse racing results on his speakerphone. The twin ogres of destitution and misery again sent him visions of begging on cold streets and lining up at crowded soup kitchens. When waves of nausea rooted him in his bed, it was only thoughts of his grandmother, Josephine, that could raise him up like Lazarus. He would take her picture from his wallet, smiling inside at how they both shared a mole on the tip of their noses, which people often mistook for flies. Seeing her face would force his feet to the floor, then out of the dormitory and into the sun, into possibilities of finding his new life in London, a new life full of kindnesses and adventure. When Randall had first ambled into view outside Ridgemount Gardens, Jasper would have been more likely to guess the winning lottery numbers than possibly imagine that the approaching man, in a blue striped sweater and clashing maroon moleskin trousers, would provide a secure place for him to live. If not quite a room of his own, as Bloomsbury's famous Virginia Woolf had advocated for every woman, at least it was a space of his own, even if it was rather cramped and dusty. But at that moment, if he'd just listened to the bewitching bluster of the wind through the tall yellow trees' branches above him, he might have suspected that changing fortunes were afoot. Randall waved his cane from side to side along the narrow tarmac path before halting several steps from Jasper, who had no clue that while Randall huffed and puffed, swinging his hips like liquid, he was distractedly consumed with thoughts of the generous apple strudel slice that his German girlfriend Lottie had left for him in his fridge. Likewise, Randall had no clue of Jasper's presence beneath the Bob Marley plaque, where the forlorn Yorkshireman bathed in faint hope, having learned from a quick mobile phone internet search that the musician had lived there during a period of great insecurity, when his professional success was far from assured. As Jasper watched, the aging yet somehow youthful Randall had balanced his cane against the gleaming black railings, then fished in his shoulder-slung brown leather satchel before facing the wooden door. Jasper's eyes wandered from the man's wide back and flexible hips to a gaunt reflection in the glass panel. "Is that me?" he thought, wilting inside. The sight was a gut punch. A sudden metallic crunch was heard as keys tumbled to the ground. In that moment, a flock of screeching, iridescent green parakeets barreled over their heads. "The words of the great Mrs. Garib," Jasper had suddenly remembered, gasping as the bird streaked verdantly away, pulling his eyes towards Store Street and the Druid's Eye bookshop. "She said to keep a lookout for parrots," he thought, "green ones. She said then I'll know that changes are coming." In the basement below the shelves of the Druid's Eye bookshop, Jasper had twice paid the great Mrs. Garib £30 for tarot card sessions to dare fate to reveal itself. "I see new living arrangements," the hourly fortune teller had declared theatrically after he divulged details of his hostel. In the same breath, she told him to keep a lookout for the ornate birds. Jasper was unaware that the great Mrs. Garib fed all her clients the same line about ring-necked parakeets, a flock of which had been released by Jimi Hendrix decades before for a music video. They had since become one of London's most common birds and certainly the noisiest. The great Mrs. Garib knew that the chances were almost assured that her clients would catch sight of the ubiquitous parakeets and naturally connect them to her usually quite generic advice. "I'm right where I need to be," Jasper thought as the screeches of the birds faded from his ears, and the man, unmoved by their spectacle, bent down and flailed for his keys. Yellow leaves rustled in the tree branches overhead as Jasper bit his lip and stepped forward, thinking, "I must have faith." He scooped up the dropped keys and pressed them into the palm of the thickly speckled older man, who startled at his touch, while seeming to gaze over Jasper's shoulder at some imaginary horizon. Grabbing his cane, Randall paid no heed to Jasper's apologies, but babbled his own as he turned away, clearly unsettled. "Charming," Jasper said pithily, but a second later he realized the man couldn't hear him. In that same moment, a young couple had manifested behind the glass of the door, smartly dressed and smiling from untroubled, flawless faces. As they pushed open the heavy door, Jasper beamed back and lunged to hold it open. He waited as everyone passed through. The couple danced away, lost in each other, as a blustery breeze swept bright yellow leaves into the hallway. They seemed to chase after Randall's ankles as he made his way up the ivy-carpeted stairs. "Follow us," Jasper imagined them begging. He hesitated, then heard a second inner voice. "You can do it, Jasper." It was Josephine, his sweet grandmother, urging him on. "Don't fear, Jasper. Everything will be fine. Go on, follow him. Just see." Her warm words made the hairs of his neck prickle as a compulsion surged in his blood. He closed the door as softly as he could, in the same manner as that employed by Josie. "The great Mrs. Garib was right," he thought, as he followed Randall up the steps. He remembered the fortune teller's words as he sneaked across the threshold of what he'd begun to sense was his new home. Once inside the flat for the first time, Jasper had stuck close to Randall's back, even daring to reach past him into the fridge to grab a morsel of the apple strudel. "Absolutely delicious. I could get used to this," he thought, as he evaded Randall's fluid hips around the kitchen. As he chewed the strudel, his pockets had bulged with crystals purchased from the great Mrs. Garib, whose name meant strange in Arabic. While licking his lips like a Cheshire cat, he embarked on a detailed survey of his spacious new one-bedroom home, wondering, where can I sleep? He rummaged in two wardrobes. Yuck, mothballs, and too cramped, he thought. He peered under a large dining room table, crowned with a floor-length cloth. Lots of space, he thought, initially, but was creeped out by a slew of mounted stuffed animals that had been shoved out of sight. He then climbed into a half-empty armoire, pulling the door closed, but something in the dark gave him the shivers. None of them would do. Eventually, his eyes alighted enviously on Randall's bed, then dropped to the generous space beneath. Aha! That could be the spot, he thought as he wormed his way underneath the bed and got cozy. This is really rather nice. Much more light than I expected. He leaned forward and peered towards the tall Georgian window. Outside, a wall of yellow trees gently swayed. Jasper's thoughts of gratitude turned to the great Mrs. Garib and those past readings in the basement of the Druid's Eye. He was also reminded of her by the pocketful of crystals that dug painfully into his bony hip. "Thank you," he thought, picturing the creased corners of her eyes, the glitter on her cheeks, and her dreadfully chapped lips that had persuaded him to part with an additional £50 at the conclusion of each reading. "Do not underestimate the power of these crystals. They will save you from those who wish you harm," she had told him as she selected the brightly coloured stones that had filled his pockets like ballast ever since. "Who wishes me harm?" he had asked, perturbed. The great Mrs. Garib had raised her thick eyebrows in the candlelit gloom and shook her head. "It's not for me to say now," she replied, lowering her voice forebodingly. "But I can look for some clues in our next reading. Should I book you in now? In the meantime, these will help." He recalled how she had reached for the bowl of crystals during their time together. In pained concentration, she had examined each stone for mystical qualities. "You're in very safe hands," she'd said, her performance reassuring him. His luck had been so dire at that time that he already suspected a nefarious influence, perhaps even his estranged mother. "By the way, my bespoke crystal selection service is totally free," the great Mrs. Garib had divulged as her violent jazz hands waved over the bowl and the entire table. "Yes, I am guided by incredibly powerful forces, but you pay only for the stones." Thank you for joining me, DJ Swales, on my podcast and today's reading from my upcoming book, People of Bloomsbury. I really appreciate all of the support my listeners give me on Patreon and buying my books, and I hope you'll join me for the next episode. Thank you so much.